Fan Morning Show is back on the air, and it's been 3 days since the Toronto Maple Leafs were eliminated in Game 5 by the Florida Panthers, and it's going to be at least 30 years between Stanley Cups for Canadian franchises. It's Justin Cuthbert and Brent Gunning this morning. Ailish off for one more week to tend to a personal obligation. Gunner, good morning. How are we feeling a couple days after the fact?
You know, I actually thought we were good. We were moving past this. I actually decided to take a little hockey sabbatical mentally in my mind yesterday. So I thought, you know, I'm going to listen to reaction from the Celtics and 76ers game. And guess what people were doing? Barbecuing a young core with an MVP that can't get it done. It feels way too close to home. Let's do it. We got a week at least. The Leafs react. We didn't get anything today. I think we're going to get something. Yeah. Or we didn't get anything yesterday. I think we're going to get something today. Still, I always say basking in the afterglow after a win. Whatever the absolute opposite of that is, that's I'm still feeling. A little sullen on a Monday morning.
Yeah, lots of big games, obviously, for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the last month or so. But today might be the most newsworthy day that we get out of all of them, because the Maple Leafs will hold...
Little free plug. There's going to be a lot to chew on tomorrow is what there's going to be.
Yes, and throughout the rest of the day. And we will be airing the Maple Leafs end-of-season media availabilities immediately after our show at 9 a.m. right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, J.D. Bunkus, will be hosting our coverage, take you through all the players and management. Kyle Dubas speaking today. And we got Blair and Barker at Sportsnet 360 starting at 10 a.m. and on our alternate stream at sportsnet.ca/590 and the Sportsnet app. Yes, it's a big, big, big day. We're going to get some answers certainly right after the show. I wonder if we get a few answers before the show. If we were ever going to get a live breaking news item on this program, it would be today, because, yeah, they've done a really good job being quiet. Kind of disrupted. Are we getting a little bit gutter?
Just a touch.
Just a bit, because if they did it yesterday, we were going to be on. But they kind of held their cards close to the vest all weekend. I'm sure it's been feverish behind the scenes, but they decided that they're going to push it one day. It was supposed to be Sunday, Mother's Day, which would have been kind of cowardly, honestly. But they will do it Monday when everybody's raring to go and ready to be down there at the rink. So big, big day. And we will have that coverage throughout the day. And of course, you and I will discuss everything that happens tomorrow. But today we can continue to speculate, and we can continue to talk rather about, or more importantly.
And they wanted this. If they wanted clarity on this, they could have made a decision or an announcement yesterday. So they opened themselves up to another day of questions and wondering and pondering. And I think that the interesting thing is that so the day off or the off day between news when we were all kind of expecting it yesterday, it's a bit of a Rorschach test. Whatever you kind of think should happen with this team this offseason, you can convince yourself that's what the extra day off was for. If you're somebody who said, look at the moves he made, I like what Kyle Dubas has done, the strides he has taken as a GM, they're just spending the day negotiating. You got to figure out what's happening there. If you're somebody who says, it is, they're going full nuclear, they got to blow it up, you can say, they needed at least the day to get their ducks in a row after the season ending on a Friday night the way it did. So that's the interesting thing to me, is with the extra day, I think a lot of people have probably convinced themselves one thing or another is going to happen. And you and I were about to speculate as to what we may get. I honestly don't know.
Well, the one thing we know for sure is that the time crunch is almost overwhelming. Like what they're dealing with here over the next little bit is like they are up against the clock, and certainly they were up against the clock this weekend, having to deal with the emotion and the fallout from a Friday night loss, game five, overtime, Nick Cousins, misery, all that, turning the page the next day. Like what decisions could you make in the heat of the moment the next day? It would be a little bit difficult. Yep. I understand contingency plans are in place, conversations are happening, but the real conversations happened this weekend at some point, and to expect them to be ready to roll out all these executive types and players and be ready to have everybody on the same page and ready to do the PR thing where it's not complete hijinks, I'm actually surprised even that they're ready to go today, because there's that much that has to be decided. So if there's been major negotiations, if there's been a contract extension for Kyle Dubas, if there's been a dismissal for Sheldon Keefe, it's the other way around. We have no idea really what's going to happen yet. I'm hoping, selfishly, that we get something before the end of the show that we can really dive into. All those questions will be answered at some point today, we believe.
As a guy who's worked a lot of nights in this business, I have done my fair share of breaking news shows. There's nothing more fun. It is really fun when your team wins. You get to come on that the next morning and talk about it. But breaking news, there are a few things like it. We got Frank coming up later on. I joked with you pre-show that is actually just going to be us interrogating him. We get the pliers out, a fire poker. We are going to get to the bottom of what Frank knows in that 7 7 o'clock.
Yeah, Frank, 7 at a.m. We are going to open your open the phone lines and take your calls at 7:30. The Leafs Therapy Hotline will be open. You can call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, and star 590 on your Rogers cell phone. Whatever's on your mind, we'd love to hear from it. And then we have a perfect 8 a.m. hour, Luke Fox and Steve Dangle, to talk about everything that happened on Friday night and the implications of this weekend and today. But this is our last chance to talk about actual game action.
The game of hockey.
The game of hockey. So I think we should, because we have to like completely formulate our opinions based on what we saw. Mm-hmm. And to jump from, okay, off season, from game four and what we saw before game four, mm-hmm. we'd be missing some context. So I think we do have to discuss the loss. Again, the Leafs were held to 2 goals for the 7th straight time. The offense dried up. This is a team that was supposed to be built around their high-powered offense, their power play that would kill you if they were given power plays. And ultimately, it was the offense that let them down. They had Joseph Woll in net. Mm-hmm. They had solid performances from some players, regrettable ones from others. But ultimately, it came down to a lack of goal scoring. And really, if you want to get granular, 2 mistakes from Timothy Liljegren, mm-hmm. 1 bad goal on Joseph Woll, mm-hmm. and a disallowed goal
that might play
into things just a little bit. So where do you want to start on the game? Because, I mean, ultimately our conversation is going to stray a little bit, but I want to try and get through, you know, what the important points were from the game before we sort of move on and go big picture.
I want to get the Joseph Woll bad goal out of the way because I don't want to skate past it. That was a big part of the game. The fact that the Leafs were able to that traditionally has been a nail in the coffin for this Leafs team. And I don't mean mm-hmm. this year's Leafs team. I mean, I reference this guy all the time. I wish somebody else was top of mind. The Jonas Enroth, Michael Hutchinson, there's the guy. The Jonas Enroth, Michael Hutchinson type backups have generally come in and within the first 3 or 4 shots of the game, with Hutch, it seemed to always be the first shot of the game, give up a stinker. The team just deflates, saying we can't win with this guy. Now, I think part of it is that they have a lot more belief in Joe Woll than they did in an Enroth or a Michael Hutchinson or whoever you want to say back there. But the fact that he had the bad goal, and that has typically been something that early kills this Leafs team. They were able to rebound from it. I thought he was pretty good afterwards, but yeah, we always talk about it. This, and again, this guy doesn't have the pedigree. He's played maybe not even 10 NHL games if you combine regular season and playoffs yet, but this was always the thing with Freddie Anderson. This was always the thing with Jack Campbell, is that when the chips were down, and hey, the team put them in this position, this wasn't Joe Woll that did it, but when the chips were down, they could not out-goaltend the other guy at the other end. And look, almost always it was a really tough challenge, be it Carey Price or Andrei Vasilevsky or wherever, or whatever Blue Jackets goalie was on. I was about to say on fire, that would be very bad given what happened to Blue Jackets goalies, but whatever Blue Jackets goalie was standing on his head in that series, okay? They've always ran up against that, and it was a factor in the Game 5 loss. It just was. It wasn't the reason they lost it, but if he's able to stop that one, it's a completely different game. And yeah, believe me, I want to scream and yell about the Morgan Rielly thing, but I just think we can't skate past that. We're going to sit here and heap a ton of praise on Joe Woll, rightfully so, but that goal was a big factor in the game.
Yeah, I think a couple things need to be, are true here. And one is that we were a little too quick to like, oh my God, savior Joe Woll, he's going to be the guy. This is, we are all good.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, you can be excited about the $700,000, the prospects of him being a great goaltender, him being part of the organization next year, and maybe being the lead guy. But this was the 4th goaltender to start the season, who clearly shot up the rankings a little bit. But to expect him to be a savior in this moment was probably always far-fetched. For him to get 4 straight wins, to out-duel Sergei Bobrovsky. By the way, Sergei Bobrovsky's playing. Like, I think it was, we got a little too caught up in the hysteria there. But I will say, he was great in the game.
Oh, yeah. No. I want to be very clear in everything I said there. I still feel like Joe Woll is at the very worst the 1B for this team next year. I think if everything goes according to plan, he's probably the 1A by the end or mid of next season. But I'm very guilty of this with players I'm in the tank for. We all have guys we're a little biased to, where you come on and you say, it's great. And then the bad thing happens and you go, yeah, but that's just a one-off. So we got to mention it. It was far too important of a moment to just skate past. But other than that, I think, you know, if you're going to do, what do we do? Our problem or our guys who are wearing it the most power rankings last week. It's like Joe Woll still 19 on that list for me, pretty much when you look at the 19 guys who played.
Certainly low. And as much as that was a bad goal from Aaron Ekblad, it was a hole that they had to dig themselves out of. And I guess they did. I thought late in the game, where Florida did have a lot of pressure, I never once felt like Florida was actually going to score
yeah.
to make it 3-2 in regulation. And I don't know if I feel that with Elias Samsonov in net. I certainly wouldn't have felt that with Freddie Anderson in the net. I certainly wouldn't have felt that with Matt Murray in the net.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's something there. I don't know if that's like a weird subconscious thing. I don't know if that's like a, hey, no, they got nothing to lose if they score again, really. So whatever. I actually felt really comfortable late with Joseph Woll. And I think that is real, and I think that is something that they're going to build on beyond the fact that, oh, it's just this one moment. He's a good goaltender, and he makes $700,000 for a couple of years. This is a really good thing for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I feel that way as well, and for me, I don't know, maybe it's just the, I don't know, it's just something about the way, obviously, he plays the position, but the thing that gives me the most confidence is he just has this real ease about him when he comes out of the net to stop the puck on a hard rim around, or he'll come even out in front of the trapezoid to stop it before it goes in that dead area. And look, all it takes is one time for him to blow a shoe, and I'm never going to feel confident again out there. But it's just the way he handles himself, his demeanor, his comportment, all of that stuff. It's just everything you want to, you know, he's like a warm glass of milk. He makes you feel safe, honestly. And as for a goaltender, that's pretty much as high a compliment as you can get.
Okay, so William Nylander ties the game late. I think we should go to William Nylander next
yes.
because, why not throw a bit of positivity in there? It should have been an iconic moment when he scored that goal. He's shown on the Jumbotron. He sees himself. Now, the broadcast didn't pick up the extent of it.
The in-house cut away from it very quickly as well.
He said
a bad word.
I know. It's so annoying because that should have been such a moment. It should have been such a thing. It should be down in history as him scoring that goal, looking at himself and saying, let's effing go, and having everyone respond
to
it.
Hey, if Tom Brady can do it, why? Well, championship rings.
And yet you're cutting away from it. And the broadcast didn't pick it up perfectly either, but
awesome.
You saw the tweets, and it's like, that is a moment.
Yeah.
And William Nylander provided moments. William Nylander was brilliant at times in this series and really, you know, kind of gave more evidence to the argument that he is the one guy who can raise his level.
Mm-hmm.
He is the one guy, at least among forwards, because we're going to get to one more who raises their level, that is right for this market, this moment, these situations. He was, like, it felt like he was going to be the guy. It had to be Nylander, and he did provide it. The fact that they were able to waste that moment, which was another, again, should have been iconic, hurts. But I wonder if there's a little bit regret involved here with Sheldon Keefe and the way that they used him, because the power play did go 2-for-11. You only got 11 opportunities.
Yep.
He was on your second unit, and he was the only guy who it seemed like at times in the series was capable of actually delivering when the chips were down. He did that in regulation. He did it late in the game to force it into overtime. But I wonder if there's any regret, even though strategically I kind of get it, like this weapon right off the bench that joins any group and can be on the ice with anyone and can be dangerous for the final minute of the power play. I wonder if there's some regret that you left a guy who was really your only option, or at least it devolved into him being your only option to actually score and come up in big moments. And he wasn't out there in power play situations, at least with power play one.
So I think often, you know, this was part of the thing when the core four was all put together and Tavares was coming, and you've heard this with other teams in the NHL as well, as well, there's only one puck out there. How's it going to work? And I think that's often a pretty dumb criticism. But with the least PP1, I think that's actually why Nylander's not there. How many guys can you have that want to handle the puck a fair amount on the power play? And look, William Nylander is not some demonstrative guy that he's going to be slamming his stick, beaver tailing if he doesn't get it. But, you know, he's a shooting decoy. I suppose he's useful in that regard. But you want William Nylander on the ice because you want him ripping the puck, or quite frankly, you want him making decisions with it. You also want Mitch Marner doing that. Austin Matthews is a guy you want shooting. We've talked about Morgan Rielly and how he's really come into his own again in this postseason. John Tavares, for everything we don't like about him, down low, net front presence on a power play, that's exactly what he's there to do. And Ryan O'Reilly is one of the guys who scored the goal in the series that you can see. So I totally get it of saying, why not? But we all know where, look, like,
we know why.
Okay, yeah, let's just do it. We're having off-season conversations. It's because somebody wasn't going to be very happy.
Yeah.
And a Mitch Marner who's unhappy and a William Nylander who's unhappy, I imagine, not knowing the personalities of these guys, but based off the way they're coached.
You know what?
We do know the personalities.
One's
going to sulk a little bit about it,
and the other guy's going to go make score excuses. A goal.
Yeah,
exactly. He's going to go out on the ice, and it's not going to be an issue for him. And if we're going to get into a little offseason here, but if there's one difference between those two guys who are really the trade candidates, if we're talking about trading out of the core four, it's Nylander or Marner. One guy does not make excuses. One of them doesn't hold or has no accountability whatsoever. And the guy who got no accountability or has no accountability was on the ice in all these important moments. And the guy who got less ice time, less opportunity, kept delivering and earns less money, kept delivering when the chips were down every single time, at least it seemed.
Yep.
I mean, he had to get pushed a little bit. He had to get a little slap on the wrist a little bit.
It's Willie.
They know Willie. Like, Willie is, you can set your watch to him kind of fading a little bit. And then it's like, Willie. And then he plays well.
Well,
with Mitch Marner, the Mitch does not work.
That's what I was going to say, is that it's like, this is another baptism. Some guys just need a good tightening every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's William Nylander. Some guys cannot be tightened. Some guy, Austin Matthews is very...
Some guys get worse if you try to tighten them.
Austin Matthews, and I'm not putting him in the boat of gets worse, but he's going to do what he does, okay? You can change his line mates up, and we've complained about his line mates all year long, but when Austin Matthews is right, kind of doesn't matter who his line mates are. He had one of his best seasons with Zach Hyman before he was Zach Hyman and Connor Brown, okay? So he doesn't need greatness around him to make it work. And I'm not saying Marner does either, but with Matthews, you can't tweak him. You can't get him going. But when you try to, it doesn't seem to throw him off his game. I mean, we go back to... It was the New York game when he... Now, I can't even remember if this was this year or last year with the New York game that Sheldon Keefe called everybody soft. But there was the other game this year.
2 years ago.
So that was, that one was 2 years ago. There was the other game this year where... I'm forgetting where it was, but it was on the road. Marner got benched for a shift. It was at Anaheim. He gets benched for a shift. He goes down and breaks his stick. And look, you want to be the fiery guy who's slamming sticks because you're upset? I got no problem with it. Go out there and follow it up. William Nylander, it's the thing we talk about, why he is so perfect for this market. You could have Johnny from Mimico screaming in his face, "You're a bum, you're no good, I hate you, you never back check." And you go, "Sick, bud, I'm going to go tuck one right now," because that's who William Nylander is. It does not affect him. Some guys it does. I think it's pretty clear. We've talked about Marner specifically, of how much he wears being that guy in this market and all of that. And just when you try to put one up against the other, it is just so frustrating, especially when you throw in the salary dynamics of it all.
God, it's so embarrassing that they cut away from William Nylander there. Like, honestly, this is, like they want to be squeaky clean, but guess what? Playoff hockey's not squeaky clean.
So here's the interesting thing. They got, because, you know, I've been to a fair amount of Leaf games. I go to half of the home games that they play every year. They are super squeaky clean. There are a lot of other buildings that would put up a replay of, oh, here's the penalty that clear as day got missed. The Leafs did not do a lot of that during the regular season.
A couple of games I went to, they're 1-5. I think I went to 5 playoff games. Yeah. And they tried to lean in a couple times when they were mad.
So it was really noticeable. And again, like, maybe it was just the heat of the moment that got to me a little bit. It felt like everybody in that building had their backs against the wall, including game ops. The two missed high sticks right before the Morgan Rielly no goal call, which we'll get to in a second. They threw replays of that up. There was a play where, trying to remember, I think it was right at the end of regulation, Marner gets dumped by Mark Stahl. They show that. They throw that up on the Jumbotron, gin the people up. The Morgan Rielly stoppage, they were throwing that one grainy JFK image of the puck over the line over and over again. So, and look, we can't pretend this stuff doesn't matter. I think this was a regular season game, but it might have been a first-round playoff game where there was a questionable high stick, or it wouldn't have been a puck over the glass, but it was a high stick penalty in Boston. And guess what? They showed it on the Jumbotron. The fans went nuts, and the refs reversed the call, okay? So you have to do this. You have to play dirty. We talk about it with the team all the time. I think it's not the reason why the Leafs lost, but the Panthers just have bad dudes who don't care what happens to you out there. Radko Gudas, Mark Stahl, Matthew Tkachuk, Sam Bennett. And I'm not saying you want a whole team made of that. You want a quarter of your team made of that. And I think that's a reason why. Yeah. So everybody needs to do what it takes at this time of year. And man, that certainly included game ops, honestly.
Like, the inmates might have to run the asylum in like really important moments. Like, if it might just devolve into, okay, whatever Radko Gudas does, we're all in.
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, we're going to just step away.
Side note.
You know, it's everything that's happened on the ice is like really nice. And like, they're having fun out there. Like, it's honestly pretty embarrassing.
Did you see the picture of Radko Gudas screaming in Joe Wall's face?
I love that Joseph Wall had no idea that. And I actually believe that.
I believe his mind just went blank. He's like, game over, time to shut down. Him and John Tavares, let me tell you. I know it's Matthew Nyes who's living with him. Something tells me Johnny T and Joe Wall will get along just fine.
Yeah, Tavares and Wall on vacation would be interesting.
Where's the power ports? I have to plug in. I am low on juices.
Last thing on Nylander.
Yes.
Letting another team benefit from the final season of his $6.9 million salary, in my opinion, would be a major, major mistake. If someone's going to help you win next year,
yep.
William Nylander's on the top of the list for me.
So this question is answered by the offseason strategy. And obviously you're not going to take some massive step back where you say, if we get in the playoffs, that's a good year. No, but I think that just with the reset that's going to happen here with Austin Matthews needing an extension and Nylander either needing an extension or needing to be traded and Marner, who knows what's going to happen with him. Is that I think you need to look at it as, is this another all-in year for the Leafs? And if it is, what would you have to get back in return for William Nylander to move him ahead of this season if you're going to move him? Like, what does the return have to look like? Because the idea of, okay, a picks package and there's one young roster player that can maybe help, but really is going to be at best middle six for the next couple of years. Like, what does that do for this Leafs team? I understand the point of, well, you have that guy on, you know, $1 million because he's an ELC, and then you can take that $5 million and go find your Sam Bennett or something like that. But it is just, it's the problem with this core of all the trades you talk about making is how do you forget winning it? How do you come close to not getting smoked in the deal? And especially with a guy like William Nylander, I don't know how you do that.
So reprieve is coming, right? Reprieve, although it doesn't feel like that, is coming.
2 years
John
away.
Tavares is 2 years left. You can trade.
Daniele, who's my guy in the NBA? Fran Fraschilla, 2 years away from 2 years away. We are in the second half of that now. Okay.
We're there. Austin Matthews might decide he doesn't want to be here, and that opens up room. Mitch Marner could get traded potentially. That opens up room. Like, if they want to get out of cap hell, they can.
Which deal is
going to give you something when it matters most? Which deal is going to give you value when it matters most? How could anyone make the argument that William Nylander's out of the core four isn't the most valuable when it actually matters the most? These guys all had moments. Right? Yep. They all were okay at times in the postseason. John Tavares scored a big winner. Mitch Marner had a lot of points. Austin Matthews had his moment with that big comeback in Tampa Bay. But which one was there throughout the longest? Which one actually gave you most or a lot in both series? Mm-hmm. Which one didn't shy away from the moment? It's the guy who gets paid the least.
Yep. Now, the question, there's two questions with that. Is one, I think the most obvious one is, what does his next deal look like? And that is a really interesting question, because definitely, and I'm with you.
Would you sign him right now 8 to 9? Eight times nine. Max term deal,
yeah,
9 million.
Yeah, 9 million, yes.
And just stop thinking, like, you just...
Yes, because I think if you do that, then it gives you a lot of it gives you the certainty you need to make a potential. And I want to be clear, I am down on Marner. I am someone who's very critical of him. I want to be so clear about this, though. This is not me starting the offseason saying you absolutely must trade Mitch Marner. That is not what I'm going to say. But if you have William Nylander at 8 times 9, you can trade Mitch Marner. Now, the one thing I'll say about Nylander, and I am with you, I am, what was Stewie's term? I am a full-blown Nylanderthal, okay? Mm-hmm. I am in the tank for this guy. Love him. But we cannot forget about what he is because he's in one of his good Willie stretches. What do we say about this guy for the first 3 games of the series? What do we say about this guy for the 10, 15? How many times in the last 3 weeks of the season did we say, it's actually okay because Willie's having his little lull now, and then he can, and it never really got back on track until the playoffs rolled around. And even then it was a little bit of a game here, game off, game here. So I really like Nylander. I love what he can give you. But I think one of the things, and again, the only thing that matters for this team is consistency, not anytime, but when it matters. But one of the things you do lose from Mitch Marner, there's a reason he had, 20 some odd points more than William Nylander this year. Part of it is big point nights. It feels like Marner's more likely to have far fewer goals, but it's a lot more assists for a guy like Marner and more consistency. What was the run he had where he had a point in however many Leafs games to start the season? So I think you just have to be a little careful of what does your core look like. And I'm by no means saying Nylander is going to be the only guy here and you're putting it all on his shoulders. But Nylander works so well in this market, one, because he just lets everything roll off his back, but two, because there's a lot of other guys to wear the heat. And I'm not saying it would get to Nylander if there were just two other people to wear it and one of the core four was gone or something like that. But I do think the consistency, and we all say the regular season doesn't matter. Well, if the team gets worse, it might matter. And having that guy on a night-to-night basis who gives you what Marner does, typically speaking, more night in, night out in the regular season, we can't just poo-poo that away like it's nothing. And I want to be clear, we should give more weight to the postseason, but I think you got to be very mindful of what it is you're handing William Nylander. If he's the co-pilot and you're saying you're the co-pilot, great. He can have his nights off and you'll live with that. But if you're going to give him the car keys, and it's a world where, and I don't want to live in this world.
I don't know if that's car keys.
No, but this is what I'm saying. Yeah. If Austin Matthews says, and I don't think this is happening, and I don't want to live in a world where this happens, but if he says, I'm done, I'm not going to be re-signing. You need to move me or do whatever you want with me, but I will not be playing hockey here beyond my contract that I'm currently in. I think that is kind of giving him the car keys. Because if the big three is John Tavares, William Nylander, and Mitch Marner,
he holds you through into the next generation.
They're fighting for it. Those three guys are fighting for it. And then I know you'd have Matthews 12 mil and you get a couple other, like, there are ways it works. But that's my worry. The bigger a piece of the pie William Nylander has, the more you notice those moments when he's not there. And I love the guy, but he still has a lot of them.
265 minutes for Mitch Marner in the playoffs, 14 points. 251 minutes for Austin Matthews, 11 points. 206 minutes for William Nylander, 10 points. William Nylander outscored Mitch Marner in the playoffs, 4 goals and 10 points in 206 minutes. If there's anything that I will deduce from that is that William Nylander had a little more to give, I think. And that may be partially him,
yep,
but also partially on the coaching staff that just had him out there for 206 minutes across 11 games. I think there was a little bit more there. I want to do excuses here, if there are any excuses, because I think we can lump in a lot of things here. The first one that I heard people saying is, okay, ran out of gas in overtime. Played your stars too much in the 60 minutes and didn't have enough in overtime. What do you say to that?
Let's do this like a fill in a blank question, elementary school. The Stars played too much hockey because the Stars didn't play good enough hockey in the first three games of the series. It kind of just comes down to that. If you were not in the absolute back against the wall scenario that you found yourselves in where you had to rip off four straight wins, guess what? You wouldn't have needed to lean on these guys 30 plus minutes in all those do or die games. So I don't look at this as a mileage thing because they made it to the second round of the playoffs and they ran out of gas. I look at it as a mileage thing because they stubbed their toe in the first three games of the
series. But even just in game five.
Yeah.
From a usage standpoint.
I understand the idea that, but Austin Matthews didn't look out of gas to me. He just looked off that night. I mean, just handling the puck. He went back to all the criticisms we had of him in the middle of the season. We were wondering what's wrong with this guy. It didn't look like to me like a guy who didn't have his legs. It looked to me like a guy who was just kind of fighting the puck. And that's what I go back to. Marner, the exact same thing. There was a play on the first power play of the game where Leafs are rolling. They're getting a ton of good looks. And he just makes a completely uncharacteristic play for him.
That's the first shift of the game.
Well, exactly. But this, to me, if it's the first shift of the game, is it fatigue or is it all the stuff we talk about in the moment and all that?
I went back. I watched the game again yesterday. And I wrote down beforehand.
One of us had to, and it was not going to be me. So
I wrote down beforehand that it was like a mighty push followed by a tentative overtime.
Yep.
And actually, I think I was wrong with that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was tentative. I actually think they went after it. I think they actually lost the game because they were a little bit overzealous in overtime. I guess Timothy Liljegren was the one who was overzealous.
Well, you know who? Yeah, I'm just going to say this. This is the reason they lost. Very fitting that Radko Gudas, a bit of a pick on Timothy Liljegren. What's he doing beneath the hash marks defending that? Oh, Radko Gudas is taking there like he's a left tackle. That's what happened there. So,
and holding sticks on his way to the
very net. Very fitting.
To me, that's not a worthy excuse. The next one, though, I think lumps in Austin Matthews, and that is injuries. What we saw in game five for Matthews was interesting because he was loading up the cannon.
Yes.
He gave... There was a couple 100% swings.
Mm-hmm.
Some, I'm trying to get this over the water and I'm a hack golfer and it's only going to hurt me that I'm swinging harder, but I'm going to do it anyway. He was winding up like we haven't seen throughout the balance of the season. And that just was a reminder, at least in my eyes, that, okay, there was a reason why he was taking a little bit off his shot all season long. There's a reason why people have been talking about his wrist all season long. There's a reason why people have been just saying, hey, that's anecdotal, it's bandaged up, but like clearly something's wrong with the wrist right now. And I feel like that is definitely excuse for his season, does not excuse his play though.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say because, I mean, you even look at for like the very first power play that they got, how many grade A looks did he get where he just let it fly, but then they didn't go in? and he just kind of filtered out of the game a little bit. And now there was the moment in game four, I want to say it was, where they showed him in the third period and he took that puck off the forearm wrist area. Who knows what the issue was there? Is there something wrong with Austin Matthews? Probably, almost certainly. Again, I told when we had McKee on last week, I said there are two great pieces of news I can hear about Austin Matthews this summer. One is that he has signed a contract extension with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the other one is that he will be ruining his golf season with wrist surgery that will make him the Austin Matthews that we saw in his 60-goal season. Whoever did Sheldon Surrey's wrist and gave him the bionic one, let's go get that done. That would be the best piece of news Leafs fan could hear, is having some certainty as to what is wrong. Because it's been a thing all year of, is it a bruise? Is it a soft tissue injury? It seemed to be something that surgery wasn't going to fix. Mm-hmm. Now you've got a whole offseason ahead of you. And I think that it's a bit of an excuse, but like to your point, it's not, he was still able to do other things in the game that require a lot of tensile strength. He was winning stick battles, winning puck battles, all of those things. So I don't think you can look at it as a complete excuse, but I also don't think you can poo-poo it away as absolutely nothing.
Well, it's an interesting variable too for this summer, right? If he goes under the knife for a...
And we should clarify. We have no idea if that's a possibility. It's just the prevailing...
I'll clarify.
I have no idea.
Okay, I don't know if we know that for sure, but if there's a wrist issue again that hampered him all season.
Yeah.
And it needs intervention. Even if it doesn't need
just
intervention.
A scope, a cleanup, whatever.
If he's not playing golf this summer as much as he would like, that means there might be a wrist issue that actually needs to be taken care of in whatever way, whether it's rehab, whether it's surgery, whatever.
This
is a chronic wrist issue, is it not? Right?
Yeah.
It'd be the second time in 24 months he has surgery if he has surgery. It's the second time in at least three off seasons where he's dealing with a wrist injury. And this is a guy who might want to earn a boatload of money, a precedent-setting sort of contract signed this summer. I think that's something you got to be concerned about if you're a fan of the Maple Leafs or you're in Maple Leafs front office. Hey, this guy who every other year has a bum wrist is going to want $15 million a year or whatever he's going to want. Like, it's got to be a consideration here this summer.
Well, and this goes back to it wasn't a wrist thing, but this is part of the concern about Austin Matthews. When people talk about it of... You know, I hear this from some people, he doesn't burn to win, it doesn't hate to lose, and we can have that debate.
I think he can get there, by the way.
Definitely,
I think he can get there.
I agree with all that. But the one concern you have going back to the beginning of his career is, when's his 20 games that he's going to miss going to come? Because for the first two seasons, that was a thing. And it'd be one thing, you'd feel almost a little better if it was something that kept flaring up, but I recall one being a knee, one being a back, now he's got a wrist. So if the injury thing is a concern, it certainly doesn't feel better that you now have at least one for sure problem area. Like, will there ever be a time in Austin Matthews' career in the next 5 years where he has a little moment on the bench where he's doing the rolling of the wrist and we're not going, here we go again? Like, it's just going to be something that pops up. I think it will be something that you have to take into account with the contract, but it goes back to a guy who holds all the cards. The no move's going to kick in. What are you going to do? Are you going to move him before that? Are you going to have the conversation, have the negotiation after the no move clicks in, and you're kind of, you know, screwed in that regard? So I think it's a very, very tough position the Leafs are in. I think they can't necessarily afford to play complete hardball, go the Nathan MacKinnon route.
Yeah, and it's a tough spot.
And this is the other part of it as well, is that everyone will sit here and say, no, Nathan MacKinnon was a topic of conversation. Kinda. If Austin Matthews doesn't have a contract, forget September. If he doesn't have a contract in August, it is going to be alarm bells blaring in this market. And these things take time. Guys have had deals done before camp, and it's not been the end of the world. But, man, you'd certainly feel better once a pen gets to paper.
And you feel better about the fact that, you know, certainly the Toronto Maple Leafs have a handle on what's going on here with the wrist.
Of course.
Like, the doctors, I'm sure, know exactly what's going on. And if this thing is actually an issue, they have to take that information and actually apply it. Because I understand that leverage belongs to Austin Matthews. But if you're just like, it might get better, it'll be better.
Well, it's a really interesting thing, because if it's a glaring red flag injury, then obviously that is something that allows you to play a much bigger degree of hardball, because in any further medicals at UFA time, it is going to be a red flag. Like, if it is, and again, we do not know the extent of whatever this injury may be, but if it is something to that extent where, and I don't know how doctors look at these things, but if they're looking at it and saying, there's a 30% chance sometime in the next 5 years he's going to miss a season with a wrist injury or whatever. That's something that other teams are going to feel the exact same way about. So the Leafs can play a bit of hardball.
Yeah.
But
He's so good that it doesn't matter even for the Leafs.
All it takes is one.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Now, if this is just some, my wrist is kind of dinged up, and yeah, I'm going to have a bit of a dinged up wrist, they could take that into account all they want, but there'll be 15 teams lining up to say, yeah, rish, mish.
Yeah, we've probably taken a hypothetical-ish injury a little bit too far, but yeah, I mean, the fact that we believe this, and it has happened before, yep. And this is a goal scorer who didn't let it fly like he did in Game 5, where it was like, oh, it doesn't really matter what I have to lose. I will actually risk injuring it or making it feel worse. Aggravating it, I guess I should say, by taking the slap shot because we need a goal and we've been stuck on two for seven straight games. Okay, the last excuse, or at least the thing down the excuse line or avenue, would be the disallowed goal.
This is not an excuse. This is the reason they lost the game. You cannot convince me there is no time. Well, okay, it's the Leafs. There are a couple timelines where they lose that game, but the overwhelming majority of times you play that game back, Morgan Riley has just scored a goal, whooping the crowd into an absolute frenzy. All anybody ever does, all I ever hear about this team and about that building is, oh, listen to the Morgan there. Oh, a bunch of people at church. Oh, are they practicing their
golf? You know better than me, but the fans sounded great.
Are they practicing their golf claps for this summer, watching all the Leafs golf? Y'all get your jokes off. That crowd was awesome. The building was rocking. Morgan Riley, the captain of this team, in not name, but in everything else, scores this massive goal. They show it on the jumbo.
No, not we believe.
He scored. Puck over the line. That was the fastest a whistle has ever been blown dead in NHL history. Get that guy to the ref combine. He is the greatest of greats at blowing the whistle the second he wants to. Ridiculous. Then, again, we talked about it. Game ops. Whipping the crowd even more into a frenzy. Putting it on the Jumbotron. I will not co-sign people throwing garbage, although I knew that was coming 10 miles away the second that goal would have been disallowed. And then the Leafs follow it up with a good shift, where they're hitting and they're running around and they're putting pressure. The fact that they could do that after that long of a letdown, after that big of a gut punch, having that goal taken away, there is no way they lose that game.
Oh,
do
I
they?
Don't know.
Do they
I
still?
You're twisting yourself into a
pretzel. I am twisting myself because guess what? These are little moments. How many times do we go back and look?
How many times have they had a moment and then we're like, why aren't those shifts? Why is there no positive momentum from that big moment? Like, they've never been able to take moments and turn it into something.
They took a bad moment.
They scored 4 minutes left. William Nylander, massive moment. And then it was just like, okay, we're going to play ourselves in overtime. We're going to feel it. We're going to make it wide open, and whoever scores first
wins. I actually thought they had you did too. They had a good start to overtime.
But it wasn't like, oh, they're winning this game. You know what? Sometimes you feel that. A lot of times you feel that, especially in playoff hockey. There's a swing of emotion. It's like, oh, that team's done.
Well, that, and I'll tell you.
And you never feel that with the Maple Leafs.
I'll tell you. Maybe it is the blue and white blood coursing through me. But when Morgan Riley scores that goal, and again, it should have counted. That's a goal 10 times out of 10. I don't care. The whistle went. We didn't hear it. So if a tree fell in the woods and no one was there to see it, or a whistle went and there were 25,000 people, including media and everything around the building, and nobody heard it other than Sergei Bobrovsky, who I guarantee you he didn't hear it either.
And then decided, hey, I'll put it in the back of the net here because the whistle blew.
Just wild. And honestly, the other thing that I keep coming back to with this, and I know you're asking for excuses, not my personal venting, but here we are. Why does it always have to be like this? I don't know that it would have felt any better if they would have just lost 3-1. It would have been, they had some chances, but there wasn't really any fight. Could there just not be a ridiculous, controversial call? And the fact that the refs missed two clear-as-day high sticks, one on Bunting, who better not say anything about it. He would have got unsportsmanlike if he would have started complaining about the high stick that he took. You know, the same guy who took a high stick in the face the game before and was bleeding, and they said, two is good enough for you.
That happened for Luis Duranen as well.
Quit your crying, Michael Bunting. And then Austin Matthews, the golden boy, the face of the league, the face of American hockey, he takes one in the chops. And now I want to be clear. This is part of my frustration with the Leafs about that. Why did they get the puck over the glass call in OT? It's because Matthew Tkachuk and Radko Gudas screamed in the refs' faces, and then they had a little huddle, and okay, you're going to say a linesman saw it. I think they're just scared of Matthew Tkachuk and Radko Gudas and said, all right, we better give them the power play. But John Tavares is standing there just shaking his head. Okay, yeah, that's great. Okay. Could you get mad? Could you scream at somebody? We just saw an entire team's bench influence a power play at the time of the game when we are told you have to murder someone to get one. And John Tavares just sitting there going, okay, thanks. Might as well have shaken the ref's hand. He was so proud of him for calling that penalty. It was ridiculous. And one last thing. And it led me to the point. My ramblings have led me here.
Mm.
You need more bad dudes on this team. You need more jerks, okay? There was a Hurricane sign from 5 years ago. Bunch of jerks. Jerk store. Go get them all, okay? You need more mean, bad dudes on this team. You don't need the whole team made up of them. You can still have your William Nylander, who is not going to be fazed by any of this. But you need maybe he should be better. But you need a Radko Gudas. You need a Sam Bennett. You need a Matthew Tkachuk. Drove me nuts, okay?
Maybe you need mean, bad dudes bringing in mean, bad dudes. Maybe you need to be more like Vegas, who's cutthroat and now in a Western Conference final and was like, hey, Marc-Andre Fleury, thanks for helping establish our roots, but you're gone. Maybe we need someone in here who's actually going to ruffle feathers just a little bit. But you mentioned that power play and TJ Brody going off, and that's why I think the momentum thing is garbage. They killed off a penalty in overtime and they lost the game shifts later. They are unable to take a moment and let it help them and build into more moments. That's why this Leafs team continues to fail. They have moments. They can't string moments together. And that's why I don't think it really mattered that the goal was disallowed. Sure, you'd like it. But how did the Leafs play down the stretch?
Okay.
Chasing a game.
I understand what you're saying, but you cannot say in a game that they were eliminated in that went to overtime where they had a goal that was over the line.
They're not getting the Nylander goal without that goal.
Well, I don't know.
Like, you can't butterfly effect.
Honestly,
they played like they were down a goal, and they tied it while they were down a goal.
Here's what I'd say about that. You're mostly right about that, but if anyone on the team is not fazed by score or time or what's going on, it's probably William Nylander. So that's the one way I'll say maybe he gets one.
The Leafs played really well down the stretch when they were forced to pressure. Yeah. That's why game effects are real. So you're like, oh, you can't math this thing where it's like, oh, they should have had that goal, so they should have won 3-2. They wouldn't have played the way they played if they weren't chasing the game. Florida wouldn't have played the way it played if they weren't trying to absorb it, get to the finish line up 2-1. These things, like, you can't connect these two things and say they should have won the game based on that goal. Would it have been nice? Sure. Would they have taken advantage of that moment and won the game? I don't know. Florida could have been. Florida could have been Toronto in that case. And Carter Verhaeghe scores the late goal instead of William Nylander.
Here's why I can. And I'm just preparing you for this. Your eyes are going to roll clear out of your head and you're going to want to just throw to break when I'm done with this.
We got to do one more thing before we break.
Okay. Well, so you'll be mad while we do it. Here's how I know. Because the Leafs would have won Game 7 last year if the Justin Hall pick goal was never called. I firmly in my heart of hearts believe that. This is the second playoffs in a row where you have a massive heartbeat guy on your team. The guy who wears the C last year and the guy who should wear the C this year. Scoring an incredible moment. And this part I haven't even brought up yet. Do you know what time of the game that happened at? About 7 minutes in the second period. That was the Morgan Rielly one. The Justin Hall pick penalty was 8:32 of the second period of Game 7 last year. They were so close to the exact same moment.
I thought you were going to say 7 minutes,
no,
but 8:32.
Pretty close to the exact same moment. Okay. So yes, maybe score effects are real, all of these things, but we cannot just poo-poo over the fact that back-to-back playoffs, awesome heartbeat guys have had big moments taken away from them in home crowds. And you're right. Score effects are real and butterfly effects are real. But to just say, well, you know, they should have just overcome this crushing call at home that caused their fans to basically riot in the building.
They did. They scored. They tied it. They got themselves to the point where they could have won the game. They didn't. They didn't score three goals. They needed to score three goals. Florida scored two.
Do I need to pull up the picture of the puck over the line and old Gordy
Let's get to one more thing here because you led me into it.
Yes.
Rielly versus Mitch Marner.
Yes.
This is the contrast.
Sure.
This is Morgan Rielly, who was lambasted all year long for not being a good defenseman anymore, taking less and being like, oh, this contract, which was, again, less than it should have been, untenable, can't move forward with this guy. He is the only guy, other than William Nylander, who stepped up and was more than he had been. So Morgan Rielly, all the credit in the world. Mitch Marner is the opposite of that right now for me. Mitch Marner is the guy that you should be asking
this
questions today on. Can he actually have success wearing the Toronto Maple Leaf sweater? Is that even possible, let alone the past 7 or whatever years? Mm-hmm. Can he ever do that? The difference between these two guys is stark. The difference between their words is stark. Their play is stark. Mm-hmm. Everything about them is a stark contrast. Morgan Rielly steps up. Morgan Rielly, as you mentioned, probably should be the captain of the team, is the beating heart of this team. And Mitch Marner is the guy who lacks accountability. And Mitch Marner is the guy who has his game fall off the steepest cliff.
Yeah, I do not disagree with any of that. The one thing I will say from Marner from this playoffs as opposed to playoff pass, and this goes back to the puck over the glass stuff and all of that, I have felt he was much more deer in headlights-y in playoffs pass. I just felt like he was not performing well. It wasn't a case of, and this is total body language doctor looking at him on the bench. I mean, there were moments on the bench last year where, I mean, like he looked like he was borderline on the verge of tears. He was so upset.
I saw some of that in his eyes this
year. Did you? Okay, so I didn't see it as much, and I'm not saying this is some sign of a player maturing and learning to live in the moment and all of that, but I felt like it was just his play that let him down. You know, this is the age-old argument of, like, at a golf tournament, it's like, did a guy choke or did he hit a bad shot? It's like, well, they're kind of the same thing, aren't they? And for me, I felt like it was much less of a moment too big and just, this guy's just not having it go his way right now. And you can say, yeah, because the moment's too big and I don't have anything to push back of what else it was. Maybe it's playoff style hockey and it's not quite the frame you want for that. I can hear that argument as well. But the one thing I will say is it felt, and maybe it's just because he didn't have the absolute brain cramp moments of puck over the glass or whatever, but it felt like it was a little touch less of that for him this year. That's all I'll say.
I don't know if he can get there. I said earlier, I think Austin Matthews can get there. I don't know if Mitch Marner can get there, and I'm really, really skeptical that together they can get there.
Do you have any doubt in your mind that Mitch Marner would have 32 points in a playoff push for the Columbus Blue Jackets or anyone else like that? Because I don't.
I'm sure, but this is the reality.
No, I'm not, and this isn't me saying don't trade him because of that. I'm just saying I genuinely, in my heart of hearts, believe in lesser market ABCD, he would be just fine.
I'm not completely sure. I'm not completely convinced, but I will say, the Leafs are going to have to make a move, and Leaf fans and this media market has to prepare themselves to chew on it during a regular season and hope that things are like Morgan Rielly.
Yep.
The season is like Morgan Riley's, where all of a sudden that decision-making is validated.
Cut to January. It's actually great that Mitch has 37 points. No, it's so good. He's going to be like Willie, and he's going to be like Mo.
Okay, let's get to a break. A-list after this. I'm going to do something on accountability. Capital letter A in the A-list. That's next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Okay, let's continue the Leafs discussion in the A-list here because we got to be quick. But I shared something on my Twitter yesterday, at JC Cuthbert, if you want to check it out.
If you're interested.
So it's a clip of AC Milan after a loss to a team called Spezia. And basically, the Milan Ultras are holding a session with these players.
Love it.
And they are all standing there, coach included, manager included, staring at the hardcore members of the fan base who are addressing them.
Amazing.
The fans are addressing the entire team,
amazing,
coach included. And I tweeted this. I'm not suggesting that the Leafs should hold, like, just invite all the angry members of the fan base to ream them out.
Yeah.
But this is exactly what's happening. But this is accountability, right? Like, when you actually have to, when you are standing attentively, listening to someone else's opinion, someone who pays a lot of money to be at your sporting events, is paying a lot of money to support you.
Yep.
That's real. And they're actually locked in, eye contact, agreeing, nodding, and being like, okay, like, we get the message. So I just underscored this because, like, again, not suggesting that, but what's the difference between a rabid soccer club and the most rabid fan base in hockey?
Flares?
And we got Steve Dangle on later.
Okay.
We've got Steve Dangle on later, but the most famous Leaf fan,
yes,
creates content on the Leafs on YouTube. The most famous or the most influential fans for AC Milan,
they go scream at them in their face,
are guys who they actually have influence on the club.
It's amazing.
Like, there are consequences for not performing.
Yep.
It basically everywhere else, but the NHL, but hockey, right? Because all these guaranteed contracts. And it's not to say, like, these guys, like, this is the punishment. But if this group of ultras is unhappy with the way you performed, they actually have a say on who will be with this club. So what would happen if you actually had the big bad media and the big bad fan base that seems to be tormenting Mitch Marner?
Yeah.
What if they actually had influence? What if what we talked about or what fans were talking about actually had an effect on today?
There's just two things I'm thinking of. And one is that would immediately delve into the the news battles from Anchorman with the different factions of the fan base. Be like, you leave my sweet Mitchie alone with some guy swinging a chain. Somebody would kill a guy with a trident. Honestly, that's what I think would happen. And actually, I saw that on your Instagram. I thought that was the coaches yelling at the team. I did not realize that was the fans. And last thing on this, we remember the Raptors parade, all the politicians getting booed. They should just have a parade for this team. They're all going to sit out there in Maple Leaf Square. One at a time. It's like they start with Morgan Riley, huge pop, and then the boos just get louder from there on.
Just saying, that's another example of how easy the Maple Leafs players have it at the end of the day. 5 minutes uncomfortable in front of 20 reporters. Just get through it. PR guy saying, hey, last one. After four questions, last one. It's really, really easy. You know what's more difficult? Actually having to perform or you're leaving clubs. And that's what happens in sport across the world, not with the Maple Leafs. Another example of people that are like, oh, you're so hard on them and they make it so tough for you to actually be a performer in this market. No, it is easy. It is kid gloves always. This is just another example. We got Frank Saravelli after the break.